I Am Ghost is like if My Chemical Romance and Yellow Card got in a fight.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 103 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards, who you will know him specifically due to his rap, massive rap career as Mo Dick. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Morgan Richards.
For sizzle. Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And this week, we're about to bleed magic with a healthy dose of sugar pills and razzmatazz.
Yep, this week's guest is the absolutely lovely Ryan Seaman from I Don't Know How, But They Found Me.
Yes, now this is all about a conversation of a life of a diverse drummer. Ryan Seaman has been behind the kit in multiple scenes and experienced endless moments within the last 2 decades, playing with bands with the likes of Falling in Reverse, to Aiden, Jeffrey Star, I Am Ghost, and millions of session works in between. But now you can find him with his best friend and friend of the podcast, Dallin Weeks, in the phenomenal I Don't Know How, But They Found Me.
I just noticed all the way through that then that you were doing Donald Trump hands. People can't see this because it's a podcast and it's an audio podcast. And for now, it will just be an audio podcast because we can't afford to do video. Morgan was just doing that Donald Trump thing where he holds his forefinger and his thumb together and he's just solidifying the point with his hands.
Right, before we go any further, I don't know why you brought this up. I just talk a lot with my hands lately. But while we're recording this, I've got a plaster on my thumb because I cut it open and it's been bleeding a lot and I've been trying not to get blood on stuff. So that's why I held my thumb a bit but this doesn't matter, Sean, because since I Don't Know How released a highly anticipated and groovy debut album Razzmatazz, we thought we'd invite Ryan on to tell us all about it, the band's secret start, their 80s inspiration, to his 2 decades of playing on the likes of Warped Tour, finding himself in all sorts of bizarre situations, and a bunch of stories that he hasn't told anybody before, including one secret that's kind of a big deal.
What an absolutely lovely, lovely chap Ryan is. What a great chat we had with him. I think he's officially the first guest after we finished recording the podcast who has hung out for a bit. Because after it, he was like, what are you guys up to now? And we were like, oh, well, it's 8 o'clock. I'm in Merthyr Tydfil. I'm on lockdown, so I've got nothing to do. And he was like, do you want to hang out? And we literally hang out for another hour. So thanks again to Ryan. What a fucking brilliant chap. What a lovely guy. What a great record Razzmatazz is.
Yeah, exactly. But to be honest, I think this whole podcast was just 3 bros just hanging out, talking about music. And we haven't even met Ryan prior to this. Obviously, we've had Dallin on the podcast back in episode 53. But it seemed like we knew him all our lives. And I hope people hear that relationship coming up.
Do you know what? I've just realised you've just said he was on episode 53, right, Dallin? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Which means that was the episode after our first birthday, right? Because week 52 would have been our first birthday because it's 52 weeks in a year, Morgan.
Yeah.
Okay. So Dallin was a week after her birthday, and Ryan, who's on episode 103 this week, is the week before our second birthday.
And it was episode 53. This is episode 103. We haven't even planned this. We've just realised while talking.
50 episodes ago, exactly 50 episodes ago, Dallin was on. And this week we've got the fantastic Ryan. So unbelievable. Awesome. Thank you very much to Ryan. Thank you very much to Dallin. Thank you very much to the boys for the music. Yeah, we had a great, great time. This is a chat that is very, very interesting that I personally enjoyed very, very much. So thanks again to Ryan.
Yeah, it's a good one. There's loads of hidden secrets in there that I'm excited for people to hear. But let us know what you think of this episode or any mad rambles we've had in the past with some of your favourite bands and other guests on our social media pages at Sapnin Pod. Sean, can you help me spell that?
Yes, at, which is the A with a in a little circle, at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD.
It's our second year anniversary next week, as we mentioned, so come and show us some love and get prepared for a host of extra activities we're going to be doing behind the scenes as well with our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Sapnin. So if you've enjoyed any of the last 2 years worth of crazy, crazy adventures, why not check out and become part of our wonderful community?
I guarantee you, if this is your first time listening to Sapnin Podcast, number one, sorry. Number two, also thank you. Number three, I guarantee you that there is at least five more episodes of this podcast that you will enjoy in this series so far. So please go back, check out all the episodes we've done so far, and please share, rate, subscribe, and like where possible. It really, really helps us out, and we appreciate it massively.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing a load more celebrations on our Patreon to go with this second year anniversary as well. And we've been adding a lot of different things for you to experience. Like we've been creating our own playlists for people to check out of bands we think deserve a bit more spotlight. There's bonus podcasts of us just talking absolute garbage half the time.
Bollocks,
talk about bin men, so it literally is garbage.
That is true. And fuck all bin men.
Yeah, and so much more. So if you want to meet some new best friends and help us out in the process, patreon.com/Sapnin. Now, very quickly, before we go any further and get into this wonderful conversation, Sean, you've got a couple of things you'd like to talk about because Raiders obviously released your new single, Unnecessary V's, last week, and you've had a lot of Unnecessary V's in replies since.
Yes. Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't know, my name is Sean Smith and I do a band called Raiders, which you can find online on the streaming platforms as Raiders UK, because some American bastard nicked it a week before we put our first song out. So Raiders UK on streaming platforms, Raiders Band UK on socials, on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. And yes, we released our song Unnecessary V's last Friday, which is out now and available on all streaming platforms. What I did realise, literally the day of release, is by calling it Unnecessary V's, right, and changing all the vowels to V's, I've made the song pretty much impossible to find.
Yeah.
So what I've been doing is typing in V-N-N-V-C and then clicking return, and then that normally comes up with, because we're the only people to have spelled Unnecessary with V's like that, like absolute maniacs. So yeah, check out Unnecessary V's. It's out now. It's a good song. I quite like it. Also out are I Still Function, Wasting Away, and Destructobot. Please, please check them out. And oh, also, I'd like to mention my friend Steph Van Spronson's new adventure.
Big shout out to Steph.
Yeah, Steph, who's been massively supportive of myself and Morgan with the podcast and with all of my ventures. She's just started her new, her own venture called Baroness Music. If you're an upcoming band, you'd like some advice from somebody who's had over 12 years experience in the industry, check out baronessmusic.co.uk. She's going freelance in artist development. And yeah, she's starting her own consultancy agency. So please check it out. Check out her website, baronessmusic.co.uk, for more information. I think it's going to do very, very well. And hopefully we will get her on within the next couple of months, hopefully, to talk about her jobs at Live Nation and at Baroness Music. So yes, very interesting. Again, that's our friend Steph Vance Bronson at Baroness Music. Thank you, Steph. You're an absolute star.
Yeah, we all the love for Steph possible. As Sean said, she's helped both of us out with things in the past as well. When I was working at radio, she was she's working in radio PR as well. So we've got some hell of a story. She would be a fantastic guest. But we have an awesome guest coming up for you right now. This is Ryan Seaman of I Don't Know How, But They Found Me. They're taking over the world one kiss at a time, and you're about to hear the secrets why.
Nice one. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Hey, hey.
This week's guest is I Don't Know How But They Found Me drummer, vocalist, multi-instrumentalist. Would I be right in saying that?
Sure, yeah. I'm a bass player as well, so here we are.
Fantastic. There you go. Yeah. Fantastic. This week's guest is the lovely Ryan Seaman. How are you?
Oh, Sean, thanks so much. Sean Morgan, thank you guys so much for having me on. I've been excited to do this for a minute. And yeah, I'm doing great. I'm just in Nashville right now during this this pandemic we have over here and everywhere else, and it just seems to be the hot topic, you know?
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Thanks for taking the time out, man, to have a chat with us and everything.
Of course.
Yeah, I think we should start by saying, it's great to hear you've been excited to do this, but you had the whole thing with your management that we didn't even know about before we started. So let's just have a chat about that.
Yeah, as soon as I found out this interview was happening, I just said right away, I was like, hey, I don't know if I have the gear that they want me to have for this this podcast, but I could definitely do it these days, or we can revisit this another time. And I didn't hear anything back, so I just figured, hey, we're going to do this.
Nice.
Awesome. So I'm sorry if my quality isn't better. I'm just, I'm in the middle of traveling right now. I just wanted to celebrate our release close to family, So yes. That's why I came back here. But awesome. Yeah. So here we are, I'm just trying to keep sane like everybody else are in these, I can't even think right now. It's kind of early where I am, but, for me, it's early. It's really hard to navigate right now. You know what I mean? Just in the world in general, it's like, yeah. This is all, well,
where were you when all this shit started? Like, cause I know you guys had you had the record ready then, like you had the record ready.
Yeah,
Razzmatazz.
I Yeah, we stopped recording at the end of February, but what was really crazy is at the height of everything, I was I was doing one of those emo night things that's like popular in the States. I was in Denver, Colorado, and I took a flight out with my friend Josh, who is the singer for the band Bad Flower. And so he wanted to come with me. He wanted to come with me to Colorado. And so we kind of made like a whole thing out of it. And it was just like right in the height of Corona, you know, everybody's like sweaty and drinking beer and, you know, just doing the whole thing. And I'm just like pressing that play button, you know, all vigorously. And no, it was really great. And then as soon as like that was done, man, that's when all this kind of just started. And it was, you know, wow. I didn't think it was going to be lasting this long. You know, I don't think anybody did.
No, exactly.
What do you think the last song you played was?
You mean like live?
No, at that DJ night.
What was the last song? I'll tell you this. I was in Denver, Colorado. So if that gives you any kind of indication, I don't remember.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Probably like My Chem or something, you know, because they were making a comeback. Yeah.
Yeah. You finish with Black Parade. Everybody's crying.
Yeah.
Everybody's crying. Hugging, getting the virus on each other. It's fantastic. Yep, totally. Yes.
Take a USB stick out and go home.
I was going to say, I think I'm immune to it because I've done the Warped Tour 10 summers. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to get it. Yeah. I mean, maybe I could, though.
Yeah, I did it one summer and I was like, oh, yeah, I think I'm immune to weapons now. Like, so, yeah.
I wonder what year you were on, because I might have been on that same year. And you just never know with a tour like that, you know?
2009 it was.
That was the only year I wasn't on. So crazy, man.
Well, yeah. Funnily enough, yeah, I specifically asked for that. That was on my rider. That's when my old band were big enough. I was like, right then, I'm not doing this tour if... And here's a list. Ryan Seaman, get him off here. He's not
coming out of here.
But yeah, Warped Tour is... I'm kind of sad it's gone, to be honest. Like, I know everything's gone at the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, yeah, it was kind of like an institution for kids. And yeah, it's kind of sad, I guess.
Yeah, even for adults. I know that sounds funny, you know, but I mean, like, I owe a lot of my... I owe a lot of my career to Kevin Lyman, for real. He's such a pioneer. But I mean, I have been in so many bands that was on that tour, and I'm really glad that I even got to experience something like that, because I feel like it's the best and worst tour you could possibly do, and it's a character builder. You know, brings you down to reality really quickly. Yeah, I wouldn't trade any of it for the world. I started touring on that tour in 2002, right when I graduated high school.
Wow.
So I was playing in this like all girl punk rock band called the Eyeliners, and they're assigned to Lookout. And I just remember, I mean, that's kind of like actually how I got my start. I was playing in like a bunch of like local punk rock bands in Utah. It was really cool to play with like multiple people, because there weren't that many musicians in Utah in general. So, you know, the Eyeliners came through town with that band Tsunami Bomb. And so, of course, my band was always the local opener. We were called the Teen Tragedies. And so we were on like every single like punk rock bill, because we could sell tickets, you know, like people were coming to the shows. And I just remember we booked like our own little DIY tour around the States during like the Olympics, because we wanted to get out of Salt Lake City, and the Olympics were happening there then. And so we did a little DIY tour. I met up with the Eyeliners, and they ended up wanting me to come out with them that summer. They're all sisters, and the singer also played drums, but she did that on the recordings. And so, you know, being an 18-year-old kid graduating high school, you know, 5 days later getting on a tour bus sharing with Flogging Molly, why would I ever say no to that?
That's, you know what I mean? Brilliant. So, yeah, that's awesome.
So so that was really crazy. Like that year it was like Bad Religion, Alkaline Trio, Newfound Glory, Good Charlotte, nice. MXPX. wow. Just pretty much every band like on the drive, like on Drive Through Records. You know, it was just that was the summer for me. So that's kind of what shaped up everything was just that summer.
Well, saying like spending 10 whole summers on Warped Tour over the years.
I shouldn't say whole summers. I should just say stints, because like I've done the whole thing four times, but then it'd be like you know a week here, 2 weeks there, a month here, a month there. You know, so a couple days. You know.
But looking back on those experiences, I mean, you must have just seen that festival in particular evolve so much, as well as the whole kind of scene surrounding Warped Tour at that time.
Yeah, I felt like the really young guy at the Epitaph punk, you know, parties. And then I felt like the really old guy at like the emo, whatever they called it. And like where I come from, emo was kind of like a negative connotation. Like when I hear the word emo, I think of like old hardcore bands. I don't think of like, you know, Taking Back Sunday or The Used. I feel like I sort of missed the boat on all that, even though I was like in that, you know, realm. So I'm 37. So I mean, like, you know, it's been 20 years of just kind of nonstop. And I don't know how I'm still able, I'm still here. It's kind of nuts, you know?
Well, nice. And, congratulations. Congratulations for still being here.
Yeah. It's a glass is half full or half empty. I'm so grateful. I've seen a lot of things. So I mean, the Warped Tour, I did it like 02 and then like 06 through 08. And this is in like various bands too. So I mean, like, I came back on Warped Tour like with like I Am Ghost. That was like 06, 07. You know, actually, the first time I even went to the UK was with I Am Ghost. We were talking about bands earlier before this thing started. We got to do like a Kerrang tour back then. We were supporting Biffy Clyro in the Bronx.
Oh, wow.
Nice. And that was 07. And then, you know, and then like in 2008, I was playing drums with Jeffree Star on Warped Tour. And at that same time, I was actually in a band with Dallin called the Brobex. You know, so that's I actually met Dallin through Jeffree Star was playing a festival in Texas. And I remember we were sharing a dressing room together for whatever reason, the Brobex and Jeffree Star. And so, I had a much better looking body back in 2008. So I played drums in booty shorts. It'd get hot, you know, up on stage, and it just kind of added to Jeffree's whole like aesthetic. And so I guess Down saw me play, and then we both figured out we were from Utah, but we both had like, never heard of each other. And that was kind of crazy just because I was pretty embedded in the Utah music community at that point. But he had like just come back from his mission when he was starting out the Brobex. And so somehow we missed each other. But then, you know, on the road, we met in Texas at a festival. And he told me that he was moving to Los Angeles. I said, I live in Los Angeles now. We're both from Utah. And then I ended up trying out for the Brobex, and I would split my time between Jeffree and Brobex.
So nice. So technically we can say that if it wasn't for Jeffree Star, I don't know how wouldn't be a thing.
I don't know about that.
But I mean, well, cause even the Brobex, it was always Dallin's, you know, thing, but I was just there to play drums. I was there to serve the role. And, you know, after a while, I think we just, you know, we've been playing music on and off like the whole entire time, you know, even when he was playing with Panic. I mean, I would record Christmas songs with him like every single year since then. And we'd figure out times like meet up and jam and hang out. So, we've always been in each other's lives though. Since 2008. Yeah.
So, nice.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, yeah, he's just such a great guy, man. I'm really lucky that we get to play music again, and we're also really lucky we're playing for people that care this time, because it could easily, people could easily not care, because we've definitely had those experiences too, of people not caring. You know, I remember there was this one time he and I drove to Arizona, and we played, I don't know, we got paid like $100 or something, right? And we played for like 15 people in the crowd. And I remember us, I love telling the story. And we set up like our merch table. We had like a t-shirt, and this lady like wanders in off the street, like an older lady. And she liked the t-shirt. She bought the t-shirt and just left. She thought it was like some like pop-up shop, you know, before the show even happened, you know? So then we played the show, and then we turned around and just went home. And then we all continued to work like whatever day job we had at the time.
Yeah. So I just imagine a working and going, excuse me, can you turn it down? I'm trying to haggle for a t-shirt. Yeah. Here. And they're like, yeah. That's my t-shirt.
Yeah. Right.
But with you and Dallin, like knowing each other for years, and obviously you've all been part of different projects and stuff.
Yeah.
Now getting to release an actual album with I Don't Know How, is it quite nice to just see how far the two of you have come as musicians and be able to work on this project together now?
Yeah, I mean, what's really crazy is that, you know, because we did start this in secret, is that like our first show was in December of 2016. And so we're coming on 4 years now of just the idea of the band. And we're now, and we had toured off of like the same five songs for like, you know, a year and a half, which is insane to think nowadays. You know, I mean, like, dude, if we only toured off of five songs, like, you know, 10 years ago, we'd already put out maybe even two more records. But the label just kept sending us out because the song Choke was doing really well on radio. And And so I couldn't even, like, and then the song right now, Leave Me Alone, is even doing better. So I couldn't even imagine what we would be doing right now if COVID wasn't a thing. So
yeah,
I'm really excited this is all coming out, though, because we've been sitting on this stuff for quite a while. And yeah, it's kind of weird now that, you know, we're having to release it under this climate. But I'm just excited to get things out there.
Yeah.
We didn't want to Chinese democracy it. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, we got it. We got the record, guys. Yeah, we got it. It's a thing, you know. But
another 19 years. It's coming in 2039.
Right. To be honest, who knows when this is all going to end, man?
Yeah,
it's true.
I feel like people just deserve to hear everything, you know?
Hmm. Well, especially with this, because, I mean, you've been working on Razzmatazz for such a long time, it seems, behind the scenes, just working on these songs, going up to record and stuff. So to finally have it out now and for people to hear this music just must be a great, great feeling.
No, it's absolutely fantastic. I just can't wait, because I feel like a quarter of the record is out. Well, by the time this comes out, I'm sure it'll all be out. But, like, you know, right now, today, only like a quarter of the record's out right now, you know. So there's four songs available on the internet, and there's just been nothing but positivity. And I'm over the moon about it, you know.
Awesome.
Nice. You mentioned that, obviously, with the band starting, it was kept such a secret. When we had Dallin on the podcast last year at Reading Festival, he was telling us how really strict you guys had to be about, like, not answering any kind of rumors to it, denying everything, and just even when people, like, found photos of you two playing, just be like, nope, that's not us, what I don't know what you're wrong about.
I think it was more fun to do it that way, though, honestly, you know, because, you know, I'm not going to mention bands, but I've seen, like, people from, like, pretty big bands try to go start something new, and they're waving the flag of, like, hey, it's these guys from this thing, you know, and then it doesn't work because people don't get attached to the songs, or, you know what I mean? And I just feel like with this, if we just started out like any other band did, it would, you know, it would get the chance that it deserves. I mean, I'm sure it helped that we both, you know, came from our, you know, previous endeavors, but that might also be the same reason why people might not give us a chance at the same time. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. I never thought of it like that. I loved, I love the idea. Like, when you came out with the videos.
Yeah.
And when it was like, that was fucking genius.
Well, thanks, man. It's just, you know, there's so many bands out there that are saying, check this out, do this, subscribe, click this and that. And it's just like, I just want to go back to the time where, like, you felt like you were a part of something, you know? Like, when I was growing up going to shows, the only thing I could do was just, like, go see that band at that time. There was the internet, but it wasn't like it is today. Like, now you can know people's blood type and, oh, man, they have this white picket fence in their yard and they drive a fucking, you know, a Toyota Prius. And, you know, it's just like, now it's like there's no mystery anymore. And it's like people want all this accessibility. And, like, when I was, you know, when I was a fan going to shows, like, if my favorite band even said hi to me, like, as they were loading in their shit, I'd be like over the moon about it. But now these kids want, you know, everybody just wants a piece of you all the time, or else they don't feel like they're engaged. So yeah, I think it was really fun to do it this way, so people felt like they have something to latch onto. And it's almost like a secret society. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's what I loved about it. It kind of reminded me of, because, like, when I was growing up, obviously, like, albums would just come out on CD and you'd go and get them or whatever. But I remember Glassjaw were like previewing Worship and Tribute before Worship and Tribute came out. Like, they had,
that's like
a
one of my favorite records, by the way. Snap.
Yeah, so they were, Glassjaw.net, they had, like, clues of, like, how you could find Tip Your Bartender, the song.
Yeah,
and I remember, like, going, ooh, and I spent, like, 2 hours, like, whoa, how can I find it? And I find it and be like, and it just gave me a new level of, like, love and, like, a depth for the band, because I had to search it out more, because accessibility is just so easy these days. And like you said, but if 16-year-old me knew that I could somehow get in touch with Fred Durst, all right, and and Fred Durst could read my words, I would have slapped you in the face and called you a liar, right?
Oh,
but now, I literally post Instagram photos, and he likes them, and I go, oh, what? That's kind of, it's a little bit Kill the Magic, but it's amazing, like, but it, yeah, it's just bonkers, the level of
No, for sure. Speaking of Glassjaw, real quick tangent. I remember Glassjaw released, there was like this EP they put out, and I remember you can, like, go to the website, you know, and there was like this minute and a half drum thing, You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was the first time I ever heard that song, I was like laying down in bed and I was like, man, this is a really long intro. And then all of a sudden it just kicked in. It scared the fucking shit out of me, man.
Yeah.
Like legitimately.
Yeah, I think it was the beginning of You Think You're John Lennon or something like that. It was just on a snare.
Yeah, dude, I freaked out though. I was just laying in bed, like listening, and I literally jumped. And that's kind of cool too when you can discover things like that.
I saw him play Brixton Academy and they literally sent Duraja, the drummer at the time, they sent him out to start it. But the thing is, they didn't tell him how long the rest of them were going to be. So he was literally just playing that beat for ages. And then they were just like, come on, we'll go now. He's been out there long enough. But what a band. A band.
Well, definitely. But no, I agree with that kind of sentiment that I think, like, obviously, because everything's so easy to access nowadays, that having something that's a bit more out there and you've got to find clues, it gets people more invested.
Yeah, I think it's just about wanting to follow along something that it's not the norm, you know? Like when I was in high school, I feel like I wasn't like everybody else, and I kind of had my own thing. You know, there's all this like popular music in the world and everybody's listening to the radio and doing all this stuff, but I had this like, you know, secret thing to my chest where I could just go home at night and like, you know, listen to these like obscure records that no one ever heard of, you know, in my class. And I think that's kind of cool that people can share that kind of accessibility.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to ask as well is that obviously, like, quite visually, I don't know, have this kind of 80s influence and kind of aesthetic and stuff. With all that, do you find yourselves kind of going back and like kind of watching old movies or music and stuff from that time to look at different influences or little things you can steal and incorporate it in the band today?
Well, I wouldn't say steal. I would say put our own twist.
Yeah,
you know. but I think it's, you know, again, the reason why this band got started in the first place was just out of fun. You know, wanting to have fun with music again and to have no rules. It was fun discovering things when you were growing up, and I think we wanted to stick to that model of just things that what were things that like made you excited growing up, and we just want to bring that same thing to our listeners.
Hmm. So no random 80s films. You've just with notepads, just going, oh, okay, well, they're wearing these trousers or anything like that.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, I'm like, okay, scientist lab coat, check. I think it's just things that, you know, remind us of why we're still continuing and playing music. What are things that inspired us? What are things that make us want to get up in the morning and keep going? You know, what were things that made you excited as a child? You know, it's just things like that, you know, and it's just, we want to bring that same love to everybody that cares to listen. No peer pressure, obviously. But
you mentioned being in school and like having those alternative bands you were listening to. Who were some of your influences growing up?
Oh my God. You know, it's funny because, you know, Dallin and I definitely come from two, I don't want to say completely different musical schools, but you know, I like some of the same stuff he listens to too. It's just that I grew up in like a culture where I felt like I was accepted, and I don't want to say I ran with it, but I definitely, I gravitated towards, you know, like a punk rock lifestyle. And so, so we had a venue in Salt Lake City called Kilby Court, and it's where, you know, it's where I got my start. It's where Dallin got his start. And basically it's just like, for people that don't know what Kilby Court is, it's at the end of the street called Kilby Court, and it's in like a guy's garage. It's literally a garage, and it holds about 200 people. I saw, like, when I was growing up, I was like, what's Death Cab for Cutie? Okay, I'm going to go see this tonight, you know? And it was like, you know, sold out, but like, you know, what's a Dashboard Confessional? What's a Newfound Glory? I would go because I would want to go hang out with my friends, and we would all just like clue each other in. It was like a scene, you know? So that's what got me into all this. But I mean, like, you know, when I was a child, my dad introduced me to the Beatles, and that's kind of what started everything for me. So he would sit me in front of the TV, and I'd be watching like all their movies, like Help and Hard Day's Night, you know, and Sergeant Pepper and like Yellow Submarine, you know. So he raised me up on all that stuff. And then I remember I was like at a CD store with my dad, and I saw this Green Day cover, and it was Dookie. Right, mm-hmm. It was in the listening display when you can like go to the store and listen to CDs back then.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah,
jeez, I forgot. Crazy, I forgot, right? About that.
Yeah, well, they were called listening stations, So I went to the I went to the listening station and I just heard this thing and it just sounded like the Beatles, like on crack. That's what they literally reminded me of. And I just, for some reason, it like really connected with me. And then because of Green Day, then I found bands like, you know, because when you're in fourth or fifth grade, you only have so much accessibility. So, you know, MTV was kind of a big part of my growing up. So then I would look for bands that were kind of in the scope of Green Day. But then once I was able to go to shows, like for these larger bands, I would see like the support bands. And then that would trickle down to even like weirder things to local things to, you know, so it all kind of started with Green Day for me, honestly.
Nice.
That's and cool. Then, you know, then I would get into things like Weezer and Smashing Pumpkins and Rancid. Gosh, there's so many, man. Like, and then, you know, once I went to like, you know, my local record store in Park City, Utah, it was called Orion's Music. I remember on the listening thing, they had compilation CDs. And so I picked up a thing from Epitaph because, like, you know, Offspring and Green Day were kind of like popping off at the same time. And Offspring was on a label called Epitaph. And then I found, you know, this Epitaph compilation called Punkorama, right? And it had like, God, it had like Pennywise, NOFX, and it had like Rancid, like all those. So I grew up like, if it was fast, I loved it. That's what, you know, so I came from that kind of community. I listened to like the Suicide Machines, I listened to Pennywise. Pretty much every band on like the 1997 Warped Tour lineup. Sick of It All, Glassjaw, yeah. You know, God, I'm just trying to think of everything. Like, cause I really like all kinds of music. I really do. I didn't really get into, you know, I started then as I got a little older and I moved out to California, I started getting into like the dancier stuff, like Bloc Party and, you know, Franz Ferdinand, The Killers. God, there's so many. I'm just trying to even think offhand. The Bravery. You know,
yeah,
Modest Mouse,
Avery, bloody hell. Yeah.
so things like that. If it had a dancey beat, I was all about it. But I also like the punk stuff too. I think they kind of like drove off of each other. Mm. You know,
would you say the punk stuff kind of influenced you early on when starting to learn drums and stuff? Though,
oh yeah, Mona? Of course. Yeah, I drummed a Dookie until the CD was like just scratched the shit. You know, and then I couldn't wait until like Insomniac came out, and then, you know, MTV kind of like drove my path a little bit when I was like, you know, fifth and sixth grade playing drums. But yeah, Smashing Pumpkins. I really liked, you know, trying to think, man, I'm on the spot. No one's ever asked me this stuff. Isn't that crazy? Wow. Basically, if it was on MTV from like 95 to like 97, I was listening to it, you know. Marilyn Manson scared the shit out of me, you know, and like Antichrist Superstar came out, just things like that. I was into all sorts of things, man. I never limited myself to like one genre of music. And I also feel like as a drummer, you should be well versed in, you know, almost every kind of genre. So, I mean, I've been kind of labeled as do you guys know Josh Freese is?
Yeah,
you know him?
Yeah,
Josh Freese.
Yeah.
I've been labeled as that, but in like the alternative punk rock, alternative press world, you know? Which I kind of struck because I just felt like, you know, there's so many bands out there that need drummers in life, and I just wanted to fill all of those roles. You know, I was just wanting to. I'm dead serious, man. So,
yeah.
You know, if you think like, well, why is Ryan done this band? Ryan's. It's just because like it challenges my abilities, and I just want to be the best drummer I can be. I always want to fit into the lane that I'm playing with. I filled in for a bunch of bands. You know, I filled in for this band Vanna once, and then I filled in for like Matchbook Romance, and I filled in for Aiden. And it's just from like going to shows and just like being a part of a community and being like good at your job. That's how, you know, you just, it's a lifestyle for me. I love being a part of the community, and the community's been good to me, and I just, it's great.
Well, saying that, I was going to mention, because obviously, as you said, you've been a part of so many different bands in the past and filled in for tours, shows, albums, all this kind of thing. But with I Don't Know How, like, how different is that whole process of writing and everything with Dallin compared to any other band you've been with before?
Nice question, Morgan. Nice question.
No, that's a good question. Every band that I've been a part of has been different. You know, it's just... Dude, I'm telling you, I have the highest, you know, respect for Dallin, for real. He doesn't need my help. He really doesn't. He's just such a creative songwriter. But he will ask me at times, like, hey, can you write like a drum beat for this? Or do you have any, you know, ideas of your own? And I've sent him like a handful of things, and he's liked some of them. So, you know, maybe it'll turn out on the next record. But, you know, he just has such a brilliant mind, and I'm just stoked I even get to be in the same room and just seeing how his head works, you know? So yeah, it varies from song to song though. Cause like we did used to live in the same city, you know, when the band was first started, and then he relocated back to Utah. So what I would do is I would, like, the EP, we had to do it like on a shoestring budget because we weren't signed and we didn't have any money. So we would just go like pulling favors from our friends. And so like for the song Choke, I recorded that song at the Bad Flower singer, Josh Katz. I recorded drums at his house, you know. Social Climb, I recorded it at Jason from Louis the 14th's studio. So we just kind of put this all together. And then, like, you know, Down and I drove up to, Paso Robles. It's like a wine country. It's about like 4 hours north of LA, but we recorded like some demos out there just because we were able to get it for free or cheap. But I mean, like being a band and just coming from nothing. And it's like, it's kind of rewarding at the end of the day when you just see it all like come to life, you know? But I feel like this has been like a work in progress for many years, you know, on and off. So I actually feel like I'm picking up kind of where I left off, but it's like we did the two piece thing just out of necessity, you know, because there's not a lot of money in general in music, you know? So it's like, and plus it's a lot easier to schedule things with two people when you're first starting out, if you're employed by other, you know, bands. So, yeah. And again, it started out as a fun thing and it just kind of took on a life of its own. And we've been playing catch up ever since. And so now that we were able to release this album, you know, I'm excited to see what we're going to do next. But, you know, he and I are still, we were just texting earlier, but we're, you know, sending each other ideas back and forth and we're just trying to make the most of it. So.
Nice. You know, yeah. Nice.
But yeah, but like, if we can dive into some of the other bands you've been in over the years. I mean, obviously, as you said, you've had so many wild experiences, it seems, on tours and everything. Can you just share some of those like memories that come straight to your mind of spending summers on Warped Tour or just going out with random bands at a time?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I don't even know where to begin, but yeah, like the eyeliners. I remember I did a tour with that Teen Tragedies band, you know, that the Salt Lake, you know, local hero band. And I remember emailing them at the end of the tour, the eyeliner, saying like, hey, I'm not going to be in this band anymore, but if you guys ever come through Salt Lake, like, let's hang out, you know, all's good, whatever. And then that's when they asked me over email if I wanted to like try out for the spot. So I got to do Warped Tour 02. And I think that summer kind of changed my life because I just went from graduating high school to just going straight on a bus. And it was kind of like a reality check at that point. And I remember, you know, I was one of the youngest guys that summer on Warped Tour. So being 18 years old, it was not a normal thing back then. But what was even crazier is I remember we were on the, there was this Kevin Says stage, you know, it's for like the smaller bands. We were on that stage that summer. But what's crazy as hell is that us and Avenged Sevenfold would flip-flop every day. So they played before us. And it was like the stage was about like a foot off the ground, like, you know. And, you know, the amps, you know, just the drum set that they provided on the summer was crap. The PA, it was just all like the shit. So we made do with what we had, but I'll never forget. There was this one time, right? It went this band called FON and then us and then Avenged Sevenfold on this tiny stage. But what was special about FON is on their stickers, it said featuring our 14-year-old drummer. That's what it literally said. And I remember watching this kid play and he fucking blew my mind. And I was like, I have to go on after this kid. And he, again, he's 14. I was 18. I don't know how the hell he got on Warped Tour for a little bit. But that kid back then was named Alon Rubin.
And So
I got to see like, I got to see him come up. We don't know each other that well, but I mean, we know who each other are. We just did some shows with Angels and Airwaves that kind of reminded them and stuff. But yeah, so I mean, like, that's kind of where I got my start, though. And I remember doing Warped Tour that summer, the eyeliners. I was only supposed to do that one tour, but then I got asked back by them because we got on a tour like 3 weeks after Warped. It was opening for Yellow Card and No Use for a Name. And this is before Yellow Card put out Ocean Avenue. So This time, instead of being in like on a tour bus, I was like in a van seeing like all of America. And I thought that was just amazing. I could just like look out the window and I was going to places that I already been to, but I've only been to like parking lots in America. You know, it wasn't like I got to like see the road or anything. So that was really exciting to see that for my first time. But then when I got off of like that tour, you know, I fulfilled my obligations for the eyeliners and I decided, well, I'm out of high school. I didn't go to college. I chose Warped Tour over this. What do I do next? And so I'm thinking, okay, well, I met all these people. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I'm going to move out to Los Angeles and see what happens. And I decided to go to a music school for like a couple months. But the day I arrived in Los Angeles, I ended up joining a band called Fairview at the time. They're on the militia group. And what was really crazy is I met them in Utah. And at that point, they had played like the Mars Volta's like first show, and they were like on Coachella, and they went on tour with like the Aquabats, and they were doing all this like cool stuff. And like their management was like a higher up at like Golden Voice, which is like, if you guys don't know what that is, it's like, it's basically like AEG Live Nation out here. And they're the largest like concert promoters like in Cal. So Fairview would get like they would get kind of the treatment, but I came into the band at a special time where they're trying to rebrand themselves. So I ended up being in a studio for about 2.5 years with them, and just working a job from 5 a.m. until 1 p.m. and then going to band practice all day from like 2 to 11. And that's a funny story too. So I remember right when I moved to LA, we played a handful of shows, and this like older guy, classic like Hollywood story, but this guy in like a suit comes up to us, and he's like, "Hey, my name's Mike Klink, and you know, I want to produce your band." And we're like, "Okay, Mike Klink, what have you done?" And he's like, "Well, I did Appetite for Destruction and User Illusion, you know, from Guns N' Roses." And we were like, "Oh, okay." So, yeah. So I was like, "Okay, well, fuck me then, you know?" So we were like, "Okay, we'll give this guy a chance." And, you know, we were just in his studio for 6 straight months doing pre-production. And I was getting off work, and I was just tired as hell all the time. And then to like kick me more in the groin, he offered a contract that he wanted me to, like, you know, the band, to give him like 40% of everything. So needless to say, we wasted like 2.5 years of our lives, and we had to like basically stop doing Fairview because it was just already dead in the water, you know? And so it was just about trying to like get people excited. So we ended up changing our band name, and they're still around now. They're called Kiev, and nobody's original anymore. But at the time I felt like I wasn't happy anymore in the band. We just had like different goals, but I'm still friends with all those guys. But, you know, they went on to go tour with, like, Foals and, like, Silver Sun Pickups and stuff. So, I mean, like, I was in, like, that school when I moved out to California. I loved what they were doing. But when the band first started, it was, like, kind of like Jimmy Eat World meets the Get Up Kids and, like, Foo Fighters-ish. And then when I left, it kind of turned into this, like, Radiohead B-sides. And just where it just was like wacky and, you know, smoke peyote and see where your mind goes. And we were just trapped in a studio for days and hours and months. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, I don't know if I, where's the silver lining? It's like, what I'm trying to say is though, I thought our music was just like great. And I thought we could have gone on and toured and done the whole thing. Cause I love like, you know, creating something and then bringing it to life. But the life never got brought into, and like, we were doing all these showcases for people. Like, this is when MySpace started to become a thing. And then, I remember from there, this band, I Am Ghost, found me, and they were just in the very beginning of being a band. And I think I joined the band after like the fourth show. So basically I was there like the whole time. But after my first show with the band, we ended up getting signed to Epitaph. You know, Epitaph Records.
Yeah.
So it's like we're full playing circle. A sold out show, Chain Reaction. Yeah. And so we ended up going with Epitaph Records, and then that kind of like that kind of changed everything. You know, we started going on all these big tours, and from there, you know, I met Jeffree Star just from even like going out in Los Angeles to random shows.
Mad.
Jeffrey,
how did
and
that,
I,
yeah, how did that whole thing come about? Yeah.
So what was crazy is, you know, Jeffrey was kind of like in the Warped scene world, you know, like,
yeah, he was on. He did 2009.
Yeah, he did 2009. Yeah. I was on Warped tour with him in 2008, where he did 2 weeks. I was on that summer, but you know, it kind of started a lot. So with I Am Ghost, I had like been I was touring with that band for 2.5 years straight, and you know how bands get, man. Like when sometimes it just doesn't work out. You know, it's like a relationship. Sometimes you just got to know when to like cut your losses. And so I was at a point in my life where I just wasn't happy participating anymore, and you know, writing with them. But I mean, like when I'm Ghost came to life, we like spent 6 months in like just a garage together writing. It was like the band, and then we give the music to the singer, and then he put lyrics to it, and that's how we were a band. It was wild. But we toured like nonstop. And then I remember like getting out of the band, and Jeffree Star was actually, he was like my neighbor. He lived around the corner from me at the time. We'd see each other out like all the time. And he just was like, "Hey, so I'm going to do like my first tour in the UK. Like, and I need a drummer. It's like a week long. Like, do you want to come with me?" You know? And I was like, "Sure." You know, like, you're fun. Yeah, absolutely.
And he goes, "Yeah, it's tomorrow. From tomorrow on." I was like, "No, Jeff, no."
No, Jeff. Yeah. No, but.
So, come on, Jeff.
No, he treated me so great, man. And like, we're still friends and stuff. He's just really busy being a billionaire now. So
I guess
Sessions a billionaire. I don't know. I'm assuming though. But, you know, he's got allegedly the size of Disneyland. So
yeah,
where was I going with this? But yeah, it's like he asked me to participate on, you know, his whole touring cycle in 2008, and that's kind of how I got that. Just he would just like going to shows, just like I would like going to shows. And so we met up, and I was like, okay, like this dude's pretty funny, you know. And we just started talking and hanging out, and then he wanted me to go on tour with him, and that's literally how it happened.
Did you ever think, counting in on your first Warped Tour, counting in the four, you were like, this fella in front of me is going to be a makeup billionaire. Fucking right.
Nope.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny though. I did think like, you know, I'm playing, I'll do the visual too, but I'm thinking like, why doesn't he just try starting to sell makeup too? You know, why? I mean, he had the longest lines like for merch, man. Like he just connected with people in no other way that I've ever seen anybody. But, you know, he always treated me great. And, you know, he liked I Am Ghost too. He would ride like in the van with us sometimes. He, you know, if we had like local shows like in LA or whatever, he rode down with us to San Diego once for a show that we did with like, I think it was like 18 Visions and Seosin or something. You know, we were like the opening band on that. So, you know, but he wanted to come hang out on like New Year's. It was like Bleeding Through, all these bands. So, nice. You know, that's kind of how that came about. But with Jeffrey, what was fun though is that like I could go do that, but then I could also be in the Brobex, you know, I could do whatever. Because being a drummer, man, like you're kind of, maybe not in this band, but like you're kind of like in the background as a drummer. And it's like, if I wanted to be a front man, I would just be a front man. You know what I'm saying? I kind of like just being in the back and seeing. I feel like the cymbals are like shields. They're like protecting me. I still think one of the scariest moments of my life was when I was with Falling in Reverse. We opened up for Iron Maiden in Germany.
Oh wow!
And there was it went us, Pennywise, the Offspring, and then Iron Maiden. And I think by the time we got off stage, there must have been like 60,000 people there. And that's still the largest show I've ever played. And I would say the second largest show I ever played was with IDK when we were main stage at Reading Festival.
Mm.
And so, you know, but after doing like those shows, you realize like, okay, like this is just like playing for like 200 or 300 people, but it's just a bunch more of them, you know. That's all. It's like, it's kind of no different. So I've been prepared my whole life for this. I think what I was going to say, the longest I think I've ever been home, which is kind of crazy, since I think the longest I've been home since 2005 in a row was 7 months. And so I haven't really had like your normal, like, okay, I'm going to settle down. But this year has been the longest I've ever been home. And it's driving me crazy.
I was about to say, how do you feel about that?
There's so many stories though, man. I remember like being in a studio session with the bigger lights, and then afterwards, like the producer pulls me aside and he's like, hey, so I have this band called My Favorite Highway. They're out with Hello Goodbye and the band Fun. It was Fun's like first tour, and we were and My Favorite Highway was the opener, but they were like, hey, so like the drummer punched the singer in the face, and now we need to fly a guy out like that can learn six songs in a night. Would you want to be that guy? Yeah, so as soon as I got out of the studio, So I got on a plane, listened to the headphones, and just got on tour the next day. And it's been kind of like do or die ever since, you know, things like that. Like with Vanna, I remember right after I got out of I Am Ghost, I guess their drummer, now they're all friends, but like their drummer left Vanna on the side of the road. Didn't even tell him he was going home or anything. They called me. They're like, hey, can you learn our songs that have like no structure, no choruses or verses? Can you learn, you know, six or seven songs by tomorrow? Same kind of thing. When I played with Vanna, I had to bring a notebook, and they got me a music stand, and I was just reading notes off of this music stand. And we played at like some like skate park or some shit, you know what I mean? Like starting off. So I've been in all sorts of bands, man. Yeah. Pop bands, you know, hardcore bands, indie bands, dance bands. It's just been, it's a life of a drummer, man. Mm. You just got to be well versed if you want to keep rocking out, if you want to go to the top.
Yeah. That's amazing to see, like, you've had so many different experiences with just those bands, though, and just being able to kind of not only see, like, how different scenes work, but just, like, having those random calls or random times just to be like, hey, next 2 weeks you're out on this. Okay, cool. I mean, like, looking back on it, it must just be quite rewarding to think, like, you've had some crazy opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, here's how I think about it. You get out of it what you put into it. No, that's anything in life. And I really wanted this more than anybody else. And I think that's kind of why I'm still doing it. in that sense. But what I was going to say too is that I think one of the most important things is the hang aspect. If you're able to get along with the people that you're chilling with, because you're stuck with these people, you know. It's really great with Dan and I are kind of like polar opposites though. He's like very much an introvert and I'm very much an extrovert, but it works with our band. Cause like when the show's over, you know, I go hang out with like the other bands and I go mingle and he does his thing. And it's such a crazy dynamic, but I feel like in any band, you got to have at least one guy that wants to just like be social with other bands and other people and everything. You know, I know it sounds crazy, but it's just that's the world we live in, man. You know, and I love it though. This is what I grew up doing, and I'm still doing it to a degree. I say that because of coronavirus, but trying to navigate through this. And you know, it's how I feel. I'm still in the mix right now of just like my friends and just being on the road for forever. Is like I also have my own podcast that I do. Hmm. On IW Radio, where I bring on friends from tour
tell us about it. Advertise it. Come on, plug it, man.
Okay,
plug it.
All right. So yeah, it's called Ryan Seaman and Friends. It's on IW Radio, which is one of the largest internet alternative stations, alternative based, you know, radio format. And I have a show where I just bring on people that I've toured with or people that I grew up with, and I'll have an array of people. Like I'll have people on from like Bad Wolves to like Pepper to Less Than Jake to, and all those are completely fucking different. There's like a popular restaurant chain in LA called Spitz, and I'm gonna have like the guy that started that chain on my show, but he and I went to high school together. Which is crazy, like in Utah. So he moves out from Utah to LA to become this successful, you know, restaurant guy. And I don't know, I just think it's really cool when I can just like meet all sorts of people and learn from them, and we all learn from each other. Yeah. It's something for me to do during this, you know, pandemic, you know, after releasing a proper full length. Hmm. So,
well, I think that's what me and Sean love about doing this as well, is that we can just kind of have so many different people's aspects and stories on things that like you just wouldn't expect.
True. Yeah. And I would love to have you guys on though, because I want to turn the tables around and be like, all right, so let's talk about, you know,
that'll be awful. Oh my God.
No, but you know, I've learned so much, man. I've learned, you know, and I've also learned that a lot of bands, they all kind of operate the same, you know, it's just different scenarios, you know? Mm. So
100%. Yeah. That's what I think we've learned like since doing this. Like it's going to be our second anniversary in 4 weeks.
Congratulations,
right?
So by the way.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, we've recently just gone past 100 episodes, so 100 weeks in a row we've managed to put an episode out. And yeah, from some of the conversations we've had with bands, yeah, you can see that it's a lot of it is very, very similar at the moment. But one of the things we've been talking about a lot is like release schedules, and a lot of bands seem to be going away from albums and doing like EPs or just singles just to get playlisted. What's your thoughts on that?
I feel like again, it's in music today, it's adapt or die. And we're back in the model of like the 50s where you just would release like a song for a minute and see how it goes. But I think that's the world we're coming back to, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised if we did something like that in the future. And I kind of feel like we did in the beginning, just because we didn't have a label, you know, we didn't have like a marketing machine behind us. It was just us when we first started. So we had no choice but to release things that way. Yeah. And so, and then, you know, once like, I just think it's crazy that we got signed after we got our first Rock Sound cover. You know what I mean? Like how does that work? You know? So I'm telling you, I've been in every kind of possible situation you could be in. Like my movie has been, Get Him to the Greek. My movie has been Pop Star. My movie's been Spinal Tap. You know, all of those. They're all true. So just know that. You know what I'm saying? It's how music works, man.
But. Yeah, I think people who are in bands who watch Spinal Tap don't realize how on the fucking money Spinal Tap. I have literally got lost on the way to the stage before now.
So have I, yeah, for sure.
Unbelievable.
Not to the extent of them, but for sure. No,
I don't know. I think in Belgium once we got properly lost underneath a venue. Like went to the back. Yeah, it was ridiculous. But yeah, people don't realize. People just see Spinal Tap and go, what a stupid film. And you're like, nah, so true. It's absolutely so true. It's brilliant.
No, dude, it's maddening for sure. But you know, I've learned again, like I've just learned to be really grateful and humble, because with music, it could all end anytime. It really can for anybody. There's no rhyme or reason why it stops or keeps going, you know? So I'm still grateful. I'm still grateful to be here. And I've had a crazy career, man. I've literally seen every kind of possible scenario you could be in. And I'm grateful for my experiences, and I've learned a lot, and I hope, you know, that continues on for me. But it's like, you know, a lot of the people I came up touring with, like, I just see them like not doing it anymore. And I feel like you have to give up a lot, and you have to have a lot of sacrifices just to do this full time in general, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You're sacrificing family gatherings to any kind of events, parties, funerals, weddings, surgeries. These are all things I've missed just from being a musician, but music doesn't stop. It doesn't ever. So you have to decide if you're on the train or you're not on the train. But I am curious to see what this next year is going to look like for a lot of bands.
Well, yeah. Thank you very much for doing this. We massively appreciate it. Before you go, Razzmatazz, I think, it's out now by the time this is out. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yay! I appreciate it.
I wish we had some party poppers now.
I know, right?
But is there anything else you've got going on that people can check out? Or apart from the podcast and the album being out, are you doing any other like live streams together? Or what can people expect next from you?
Wow. Well, you know, I've started dabbling a little bit in a management side of things.
Okay.
You know, I recently partnered up with a company called 921 Collective, and they manage bands. And there's a band that we both started like kind of working with together. It's a passion project of mine, just because I grew up loving this band as a child. And I don't know when I could talk about that, but that's the thing I'm doing for real. And then I acquired with my friend, his name is Mark Woodbridge, but we acquired a label together through this company called The Orchard. And so we might start releasing music once, trying to find bands that we like and release music into the world when that's possible. Because, I mean, I never thought this would ever happen, you know, like somebody approaching me saying, hey, you want to start a label, and here's the funding for it through this company called The Orchard. And it's a distribution company, but you know, sometimes, you know, bands or people get their own imprints or whatever. So, I'm partnering up with 921 Collective on, you know, signing bands. So that's going to be exciting whenever I can do that.
Nice. Awesome. And
be on the lookout for that.
And just one more last thing for me. Obviously we've touched on so many different experiences you've had, and it's been great, but is there any advice you have for kind of young musicians listening, or just anything in general you think that it's worth adding or just maybe thinking about?
I do it as long as it's fun. And then when it's not fun anymore, figure out a way to still do it, but like on your own terms.
That's what I
want to say. Cause I've been through that, you know, full times in my life, but, I mostly came from like a hired background, as a drummer for a lot of bands. And, my advice is just always keep your head up and just know that, you know, there's someone else that would kill to have your job anywhere.
True.
So
nice. Good bit of advice. And last question.
Sorry. Yeah, dude, we keep this going, bro.
You were talking about being a hired gun. So I just need to know who is Ryan's, who would be the dream band to ask you to play drums from?
Right now, it's this band. For real. I love the music we're doing, you know? And I really feel like the Brobex was criminally, criminally underrated. So if you haven't checked them out, that's what made me even want to play with Down in the first place. But if for some reason IDK couldn't be a thing, Dave Grohl, if you're listening, Foo Fighters is pretty sick. You know, there's something else I didn't even get to talk about. Maybe I could talk about this real quick. But
go for it.
And, you know, there's not a lot of people that know about this, but you guys will be the first. But when Down and I got started with this, people knew I had left my band. But I got a call from an old friend named Brian Marquis. I don't know if you guys know who that is. He was in a band called Therefore I Am, and his brother played for Vanna as well. But Brian became the tour manager for Billie Eilish, right? And when I got out of Falling in Reverse, I remember he called me up and was like, "Hey, there's this up and coming you know, girl, it's like, it'd be for like a tour. You know, she's like 16. Would you want to like try and just like, you know, would you want to try out for her? And I said, you know what? I got this thing with my friend Dallin that I'm bringing from the ground up. And I really appreciate, you know, reaching out, because people have known to call me for things like that. I played, you know, I've sat in with like some pop artists that might not be that well known, but like back then, you know, nobody knew what Billie Eilish was. And I said, you know, I'm really going with my gut and I want to do this thing with Dallin. I've always wanted to do this thing with Dallin. And I said that blatantly. And I said, thank you for that. And so ever since then, though, I get to go to all their shows. I got to introduce Dallin and his wife to the Billie team. And I think there might be a friendship now between Phineas and Dallin, hopefully. Wow. You know, ooh, maybe they can collab on some music together.
That'd be nice.
That'd be fantastic.
That was a thing. And I just was like, you know, thank you, but this is important to me. And I want to see this from the ground up, you know?
Wow,
and I think I made the right choice. And I mean that wholeheartedly, because, you know, if I were playing for Billie Eilish, you guys might not be interviewing me today. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get what you mean. I definitely get what you mean. Yeah. But, you know, but what a sentence to say that you've turned down playing for Billie Eilish.
It was a tryout, and not to say I would even make it, but that I got asked.
But
you know,
still.
So I, yeah, and like, and what's, and what's crazy too is that their management, you know, they actually signed my old band, The Bigger Lights, back in the day, and they turned it, and that was on Doghouse Records, and they ended up turning into a management company. So
crazy.
I got asked to try out, but you know, I've never publicly went on record saying that before, but but I feel like it's appropriate now, you know. but yeah, I mean we've gotten to meet her, like we gone backstage, you know, like we hung out for a minute, like we all hung out at like Puka Pop for a bit. I got to hang out with like their drummer, you know. We were like texting and he's like, dude, if you ever have any Ableton questions, like hit me up, and you know, so we all got together and stuff. Yeah, and then I got to go to like Billy's like secret LA show at the Troubadour, which is like super small, and so I still keep in touch. The other day, actually, I was getting I was walking to go get a sandwich, and I just saw outside like the crew, the Billie crew. I saw Brian Marquis, tour manager, and he saw me right away. I had a mask, and he's like, "Oh, I recognize you by your hair," and he's like, "What's up, man?" And I'm like, "What are you guys doing here?" And he's like, "Oh, well, we're practicing for like a live stream." I was like, "Oh, that's great," because she did this like whole like live show where there's like a bunch of production and stuff. And then later that night I went to the grocery store and like I saw like her head of security, and he used to be the head of security on Warped Tour too. So I mean, like, I got to know all the players from all the years just from being there. Look, I treat people the way I want to be treated, so like I think the merch guy is just as important as the guitar tech, who's as important as the head of security, who's as important, you know, as the singer, the bass player. You know, we're all in it together, you know. It's just a different job.
Nice. So, awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah, thank you so much for your time.
This is being absolutely incredible. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just before we go, maybe if we edit the middle bit to make it sound like during you playing drums on Warped Tour, you shouted at Jeffrey, have you thought about makeup? Doing makeup? Maybe you can charge like 10% for coming up with the idea. Like you're So me and Morgan will have a posh about with the editing to see if we can do it. If not, we're gonna have to get some sort of speech impersonator in to pretend that you said, Jeffrey, have you thought about makeup? You can be rich.
If it pops off, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I could buy a sandwich. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it very, very much. Congratulations on everything so far. And thank you for the music over the years. We really appreciate it. So thank you.
Yeah, and I thank you guys for having me. Again, I'm just stoked to be here and still doing it. And hopefully, you know, we get to release more music pretty soon.
Well, yeah. Hopefully we get to do one of these in the flesh at some point as well.
I would love that. So
awesome.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
All right, Morgan, Sean, thank you guys so much. So much fun, man. I almost forgot I was like doing a podcast. I thought I was just, you know, bullshitting. But
you listen to Sapin Podcast.
Yeah. Fucking tidy. I swore that's how good it was. Thank you so much for Ryan coming on and being a top chap and now one of our bestest friends, because we got on so well.
Yeah, I've already had a giant back piece of his face done on my back. So it was lovely again to speak to Ryan. I felt such a connection with Ryan, right? That I'm wondering if we actually have met before.
Hmm.
And due to Jamaican cigarettes, I might have forgotten. But it was such a good chat. And then, like I said in the intro, like we talked for like an hour after as well. So it was awesome. And yeah, we talked about everything. And, you know, he told us things that he couldn't say on the podcast, you know, that, you know, I don't want to get anyone in trouble. I'm not going to say a bloody word he said to me. So thank you again to Ryan. What a fucking band. I don't know how, all round top chap, good egg, thank you.
Yeah, it was incredible. Some of those stories literally blew my mind, especially that Billie Eilish bit at the end. I mean, wow. But yeah, I don't know how, but they found me. His debut album, Razzmatazz, is available to stream and purchase everywhere, worldwide, right this second. So go and do it. Get it in your ears. It's fantastic. It'll make you dance and bring back some incredible memories.
Yes, good band, good humans, good times. Don't know where I'm going with this.
Okay, but obviously, if you're first time checking out Sapling Podcast, Darren Weeks from I Don't Know How is a former guest, and you can find on episode 53, so go and check that out. And we're going to be celebrating our second year anniversary, 2 whole years of Sapling Podcast next week with episode 104. It's going to be a really, really nice celebration, so come and join the party with us. Make sure you're subscribing everywhere listening to these podcasts to get some notifications, and give us a follow on our social media pages at Sapling Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
That is at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD.
And if you'd like to support the podcast in any way, maybe get some bonus content, get some more Welsh shenanigans in your ears, then please go and check out patreon.com/sapnin. On there, you get to meet a host of your new best friends, some absolutely lovely people, our favourite humans, as part of our wonderful community cult that we've been able to somehow create over these last 2 years. And it's just one of our favourite things of all time.
Yes, unbelievable set of people. Thank you very much if you've supported us at all on Patreon prior to now. If you currently do, we appreciate that more than anything on earth. And if you're considering it, yeah, that's awesome as well. Please check out patreon.com/sapnin. So next Saturday, I guess. Is it next Saturday we're hosting the get-together? Are we doing a second birthday get-together?
Yeah, there is conversations going. At this current time, we're working out the date, but it looks like next Saturday, and you can get on a giant Zoom call with us again, like we did for the 100th episode celebrations on our Patreon, patreon.com/sapnin. Last time, it got a bit messy. We said some things you probably shouldn't have, and we'll probably spill some more secrets again. So if you're a bit nosy, if you like a little bit of the gossip, then patreon.com/sapnin.
Yeah, if you want to see what it's like to be a guest on the podcast, get involved in those Zoom chats, because that's how we do them. And yeah, God knows I like to overshare. So last time I said some things I definitely shouldn't have said that I'm probably going to do again this Saturday. Yay. So yes, again, patreon.com/sapnin. Come and listen to me get myself in trouble.
Yes, and we just want to say a massive thank you to everyone as part of our wild community. If you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of names on there that we need to thank. But Sean is going to give a shout out to the elite members of the Patreon, and they've probably changed their names to something that is going to be unreadable, and we're about to find out now.
Yes, so this week, the bastards, what they've gone with, some of them have changed their names to V's, letters with V, to go with the single that came out by my band Raiders last week called Unnecessary V's, because I came up with that title because loads of bands now are using V's instead of A's or V's instead of U's, and it's wrong. Mm. It's just the wrong letter. You shouldn't be doing it. Mm. So I decided to call a song Unnecessary V's. Joke's on me, because it's unfucking findable, right? So you win bands with V's, because I've now dedicated fucking 4 minutes of a real good song to be wasted because of you. But what the members of the Patreon have done is some of them have changed their name to V's. So where I remember what their name was, right, previously, I'll say that, because otherwise it's just V's and it's going to be a nightmare.
So just to clarify, they've given you some unnecessary V's.
Oh, they're all, yeah, all V's are unnecessary. Anyway, thank you very much to the wonderful Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoe, Mitch Perry, Sarah James, but she's changed... Well, she's done the opposite. She hasn't changed the vowels. She's changed the consonants. So it says, ooh, Vavav, Vavev, which is Sarah James, of course. And then we've got Vavi Vavov, which is Janelle Kasten, Emma Barber. We've got Vevi Yuv, which is Kelly Young, Nathan Croshaw. We've got Viv, which is, of course, Dilly Grimwood. Mike Lenger, Scooby Drew Styles, Paul Hirschfeld, which is Paul Hirschfeld, Kelly Owen, Kat Besant, Amadine Urbano, Tony Michael, Vov Ovev, which I think is that Tom? I don't fucking know. Amy Campion, which is Av Vaviov, Johnny Phillips. Then you've got, do you know what? I'm not even fucking saying their real names anymore. I'm going to say what I read in here, right? Scott Jones is Vov Vovov. Suckle my nipples, suckle my nooples. That's Kieran, who's back in the group. Thank you very much for coming back. Ollie Amesbury has gone with Ovivov, Avivovov. Simon Amos, Jody Shannon has gone with Vovi Vavov, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Kate Stevenson, Emily Senegals, Lucy Diaz, Dana Lasnova, Martina McManus, Vevavev, which was formerly Kelly Mallory, Erin Owen, John and Emma, Becky Andy, Marcy Jacobson, Louis Cook, Vavo Vevia, which is Jason Heredia, Nuala Clark, Jenny Robson, Sandra Kuchuk, Mike Cunningham, Kelly Cannon, Kevin Clark, Filmy Balls, James McNaught, Livy Cropper, Tallulah Grant, Vuav Viev, Sharifa Wadali, Lydia Henderson, Vave Vaviv, that's Craig, nice one Craig, Adam Parslow, thank you for joining, Julia Rowitz, let me know Julia, and of course to finish, Alice Wood, who is now known as Vliss Hvsmvsive Wood.
Wow.
So that's over. Thank God for that. I'm sorry to anybody who's listening who doesn't know what's going on. But check out patreon.com/sharpening. Thanks to all those people. You absolute set of bastards. I love you. Morgan loves you. We appreciate you very much. Thanks for being part of the Patreon. Lovely stuff.
That was a hot pile of mess right there. But it sounded like one of those V's used to play for Arsenal.
Well, who knows?
Who knows?
I don't know. I'm not going through them all again. It's too fucking many. But yes, check it out. Check out Unnecessary V's by Raiders. It's a real good song, which has nothing to do with the title. So yeah, please check that out. Please go back and listen to all 102 other episodes of Sapling Podcast right now. Check out our Patreon if you fancy giving anything back and supporting us. If not, fuck off and get on with your life.
Mm.
We'll see you next week.
Well said. Any final thoughts other than that?
No, just exactly what I said,
okay.
Which ended perfectly.
It did. I just want to let everyone know, if you were wondering in the intro what kind of plaster I've got on, it's a Star Wars one. So see you next week. Sapling!
Sapling! You fucking virgin.
You're listening to Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.